joining us from the UK, somewhere in the UK, Ms. Allison, I think it's Ms., she'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Allison Chablot. Again, she became somewhat controversial when she did something called a canal salute. And of course, if you're a Jewish person, back in those days, that was like the worst thing you could ever do. And so we had the campaign against anti-Semitism, a charity. They call it a charity, but it's an NGO organization that is really my observations, is a cyberbullying operation used to silence any dissent on the web, to go after people, sue people, shut them down, shout them down, etc. And she's now been in two rounds of court cases now. Actually, it's just same case. It just keeps being retried through various venues, I guess it is. She'll fill us in on that. And she just recently came out with another verdict that was not to her favor. And she's here now to speak with us. Ms. Allison, after making me blush last night, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Hello, Dennis. Hello, everybody. It's very nice to be back.
Well, it's great to have you back. I know we haven't had you back in a long time. You've been in big demand, though. You've been making the circuits, which probably never would have happened had you not been taken to trial. Yeah. How's it been? I mean, how's the trip been around the scene? What you're reading, I guess, on... Well, first of all, how you doing? Let's just speak informal. How you doing?
I'm all right. The weather is extraordinary, unseasonal here in the UK. I just noticed that there's some blossom on the cherry tree across the road. that's very nice. I'm glad that my second round of a battle in the legal arena is over. Yes, I lost, but as said by a French patriot, you know, we take the hits to show who's dishing them out. And every time I'm in the arena of this legal pantomime, more and more people have become aware of the issues at stake and who's behind all this.
Yeah, somebody was commenting in the States the other week. I think I saw it last week. They were saying, you know, it's really a scary thought when it's Jews telling us who can come and cannot come to England. I mean, that was a statement. Jews are now in a position where they're telling the government who is permitted and not permitted to come to the UK, and who would ever thought it would have been so obvious?
It's happening all over. Lots of people have not only been banned from entering the UK, but David Icke recently and Tommy Robinson, they've been banned from traveling to America, to Australia. So that's what they're doing. You know, it's like a concentrating, I think it was the French globalist parrot, Bernard-Henri Lévy, who said, you know, oh, these anti-Semites, they need to be contained. So it's kind of a modern day gulag, isn't it? You stay where you are. And my case, I think, has to do with censorship of the internet more than anything else. That's where we are today, travel is being restricted. 100 years ago, you didn't even need a passport, but now you need visas and passports, and people are being prevented from traveling because of their political views. And you're right, we know who's behind all this.
and I guess we can't go to Israel tomorrow either, can we?
I doubt whether you or I would be allowed in. Now, yeah. I used to go to Egypt quite a lot, to the Sinai, just down the road from Egypt. But I would be worried about going there now, personally speaking.
Too easy to set you up nowadays with the insurrection, yeah, which is probably backed by the Israelis and their intel. It'd be too easy to set you up if you went to somewhere like that.
Yeah, for sure.
So tell us, I guess, what happened with your trial, the judge, the ruling? What happened, I mean, when you went to court a week and a half ago or so? What happened? I mean, did you have a lot of support there that day? Did our enemies, so to speak, our adversaries, did they have more support? How did it play out in the gallery?
About a dozen people turned up to support me, and there was a handful of opposition, including my accusers. So they were outnumbered. It was only quite a small gallery and less support than the previous time because I didn't really publicize it that much. You know, I have these restrictions. I can't advertise my appearances in court on social media for the moment. So, yes, there were 3 days of hearing. The first days were the submissions by both sides. And it was clear, you know, my barrister, Adrian Davis, was absolutely, you know, he said, well, but, you know, that's it. You know, maybe there'll be some decreasing of your sentence and maybe one charge drop. But, you know, the case certainly won't be overturned. You won't be fully acquitted. And in fact, the conviction and the sentence were both upheld. Nothing there changed at all. But the surprising thing was the quite harsh wording of the judgment. And in fact, the judge is pretty much defaming me. One imagines that, you know, that there's that meme on Twitter. I think it was Abe Foxman of the ADL. Is that right? Yeah, the Anti-Defamation League. And he's surrounded by parrots that are saying anti-Semite, anti-Semite, anti-Semite. And the judge was kind of doing that, if you like. My songs were described variously as repulsive, disgusting.
Yeah,
I'm a disgusting.
I don't know how a grown adult male, honestly, I'm serious. I mean, just even if you're not even alpha male, okay? I don't know how you could even stoop to using that word. It is pathetically weak, you know?
I think he had the usual suspects breathing down his neck or into his wig. It was quite funny when he gave his final ruling, his whiff was completely his wig was completely skew whiff on the top of his head. So, you know, he gave this ruling, he read it out, that he'd come to his decision extremely rapidly. There was the final submissions in the morning, there was an hour lunch break, and then he arrived. Everything had been typed up and ready, you know.
How long was the actual typed piece?
It's a few pages long, several pages long, 5 or 6 pages long.
Which means it was pre-done. It was not actually done after and during that time because pages. I would sit this guy down and say, okay, show me you can type that fast, dude.
Show me
you can actually do it. And show me you can actually dictate 5 to 6 pages so fast and have it perfectly formatted and ready to go within an hour. Show me.
Yes. It will be interesting to see what other people, what other legal experts have to say about this judgment. But we will now go to a higher court. It's called the Divisional Court, which is a section of the High Court when it's a criminal case. And we will argue the points of law because, you know, that's all it is. It's just, you know, the usual ad hominem and insult directed at me for having posted my own work to the internet. And my accusers then sought out my website, sought out my videos, clicked play, and then went to the police saying we're offended. So there are lots of people who are shocked about this. And as you said,
Allison, I can't imagine you having to go through this in a legal jurisdiction because of such lunacy. I imagine having to go through something stupid like this because it is childhood.
It's surreal, you know, and I saw this morning a tweet from somebody who, you know, it's absolutely filled with hatred and loathing for me saying, you know, or this in the ideal world, Alison Chabot should never have been prosecuted. She should have been left alone to die without any friends, and nobody would have listened to her work. People. You know, that's the thing. That if I, you know, at the time I posted these songs, Dennis, I had 200 followers on YouTube. I was absolutely nobody. Nobody had heard of me. I had my little circuit in the folk scene. Oh, and the Jews also, you know, got me thrown out of my English folk band. They decide who can play. They decide which English persons can play in English folk bands, not just about who can travel. So, but they are responsible for, in fact, spreading my songs over the world. I get support from Australia, New Zealand, United States, Saudi Arabia, Canada, and you know, as I said in court, they, you know, it's just silly songs. This was my way of reacting to the harassment and my losing contracts, my losing, being kicked out of my own band on the Jews Say. This was my way of reacting to it. I didn't send my songs to any of these people who accused me and then twisted the Crown Prosecution Service's arm to have me prosecuted, and then twisted the judge to say what they want to be heard in the judgment. I tried to make these points clear in court, but of course the media only focused on the wording of the judgment. But I think it's good that there was media coverage, and we can say yes, it's of course it's a loss personally speaking, but for the cause itself, I think there was a study done by the ADL that looked at the percentage of people who either completely dismiss or partially dismiss the official Holocaust narrative. And in countries where there have been anti-revisionist laws for the past 20 years or so, the percentage of non-believers, of Holocaust deniers, quote-unquote Holocaust deniers, is far greater than in countries that don't have any such laws. I think it's 27%, a quarter of the French public are skeptical. And I think it's about 11% in Germany. It's 5% in Britain. And oh, and of course, they're whining about that we need more education and more hammering and indoctrination into children's heads about this terrible crime, the greatest crime in all humanity. It's quite funny that they're also claiming that too many people don't know anything about the Holocaust or how many Jews were actually murdered by these evil Nazis, and they don't know about it. Yet at the same time, all these same people know how evil, what an evil man Adolf Hitler was, but they've never heard of the Holocaust. So how come? I think they are. Their strategy is rather silly and self-defeating. You can't truth is no defense. You can't put down legal barriers on what was a historical event and prosecute people for questioning it. That's how I came into this movement, seeing what was happening in French to academics and others, artists, Giordani, who were being prosecuted for their opinions. That's where we are. It's thought crime. It's you know, Stalinist.
Well, here for me, Alison, the Jewish hierarchy, I don't know what you want to call it, but they are using public funds now. They want to go into the public treasury, the public treasury to basically finance their pet desires, and then they don't want any oversight. And just on a principle of common sense, as long as Jews continue to go into our public treasuries, we, the people, have absolutely every right to question how these funds are being spent, why they're being spent. And if they don't like our peering into the history, they should get their hands, grubby hands, I might say, out of our pockets. Stop stealing from the public treasury to finance your fake history. Because once you go into the public treasury, we have every right to go after you.
Yeah, absolutely. This money, they're taking our money to then bring prosecutions against people like me.
Yes. This is an absurdity. We should not be doing this, for sure.
And all this is being done, as you rightly say as well, to render immune from criticism not only the state of Israel but the entire Jewish community. They are immune from hate crime, quote unquote hate crime. They can opine whatever they like. They can be as racist as they like against non-white. Other ethnicities, non-Jewish or even Jewish ethnicities, they can be as racist as they like. That's what their strength has always been. Acting according to the principle of race while vehemently denying the right of others to do the same, as said Martin Heidegger. what we have to fight back. We have to stand in the arena and fight back. And the more that, you know, we here in Europe, and we see that particularly in Europe, also in part in Canada and the United States, but you know, still Britain, United States, Canada, Australia, we don't really have the Holocaust narrative set in legal concrete. There are claims that my case has in part done that, but I would dispute that, because we've already had the Irving case, and then there was the Simon Shepherd Stephen Woodhull case in, I think, 2008. There's Nick Griffin and Paul Ballard, who were also convicted in the late 90s. And this also, you know, according to the European Court of Human Rights Article 10, it's simply wrong in law in our under our constitution. And they can't bring in laws like this that they have in Europe, where the German National Socialists did occupy, because then the Allied governments, formerly Allied governments, Russia, France, United States, Britain, that they would then be open to prosecution for their own war crimes and questioning of that, and why. Why were all the German officers hung? Why were so many people tortured and hung at Nuremberg? Whereas all these, you know, there were more civilian deaths in just a few days' saturation bombing by the Allies of Frankfurt and Dresden. There were more civilian deaths of Germans during those few days than there were civilian deaths of Britons, victims of German bombs, during the entire Second World War. So I think that, you know, the public grows more and more aware with these increasing crackdowns on our freedoms, and that they see who's behind it, and that anybody with a critical mind will have a tendency to look more into these issues if they're interested. Of course, a lot of people are still sheeple, but I do think there is a general awakening of issues. We can see that, and it's largely due to the internet, and they are very afraid of the power of the internet and the power of the spread of information. The fact that, you know, that we are still what in a majority for the moment in white countries, and that they can try and stop the spread of this information, but if we keep sharing and we keep talking about it, and we resist the censorship, and we resist these knocks, and we keep standing in the arena and fighting back. Well, I really don't see that we have any other choice, Dennis.
I would agree. I have a question for you. Do you view yourself more as an entertainer or a revisionist?
Well, as I've not been able to pursue my musical career. And I did upload a song last week to the internet. I do miss playing in front of live audiences. So I couldn't say that I'm no longer an entertainer, or that I'm a revisionist, because a revisionist is you know, technically speaking, somebody who writes academic work, scientific works about these issues of the Second World War and the alleged gas chambers, etc., and the numbers. So I would always consider myself first and foremost a musician and an entertainer, but the entertainment part, well, that's kind of me performing to camera at the moment, although I have been to a few folk sessions, two this year. So I have been participating in music, and I think it's kind of a basic need.
When's the last time you had a chance to actually perform before a live audience?
I performed several times last year. When was the last time? I think it was in June. In June. Wow.
It's almost a year now.
Yeah.
And how much of your time is tied up with these cases, this case that you keep having to deal with?
Well, a fair bit. You know, I've been occupying myself by doing audio narration of revisionist books, and also doing some voiceover work, some translation of what's going on in France with the yellow vests. I've been doing some, I I re-upload the videos that are sent to me by my French comrades, and I translate, I select and translate and do voiceovers. I also did the same when Professor Forreston died. I'm sent a lot of videos. I have to be inspired by the particular video to then go and do that. But I have the quite reasonable audio equipment to be able to make a good quality voiceover translation. And these have had quite a lot of success. So that's not really revisionist. Yes, in part revisionist, because there's, you know, I still write about these issues, but it's mostly to do with, I would say, the freedom of expression and how this the right to think for ourselves and express those thoughts is our most precious freedom, and all our other freedoms rely on that freedom. That's my I think essence at the moment, and I'm able to do that in part musically. I would like to get back to a bit more music. I'll record another song that I wrote last year this week, hopefully.
Yeah. Do you have in the UK, as we have in America, major networks positing arguments, is free speech, you know, is it now time to end free speech? Is it overrated? Is it archaic? You know, these types of arguments. Do you have these types of arguments in the UK?
Well, there's been this the adoption of this international definition of work. And
yeah, tell me what. Hold on to that thought. I was trying to get a quick question in, but we're going into a break. It's the Fetch, everybody, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware with Alison Chablot. Come in. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back. It's the Fetch, Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware, right here on Revolution Radio at revolution.radio, one of the largest listener-sponsored and supported radio networks currently going on the internet today. Don't forget to think of the network a little bit when you are donating a little bit to your favorite charity out there, if you want to call it that. We would, of course, appreciate that quite a bit. Joining us again from the UK, Alison Chablot. She's pretty much become famous for being stalked, and really, I don't even know how to describe her situation. Like she says, it's surreal, but stalked by the campaign against anti-Semitism, which honestly, Alison, when I read your story, I just can't. It's surreal. It's surreal.
I've been metaphorically burned at the stake as a heretic.
You know, and when I, as an observer, and I look at the CAA, I see nothing but a bunch of absolute thugs, literally like mafiosa thugs that are trying to harm really all of us because they're trying to set precedents in court of law. And I see people that are more loyal to Israel, which is, as we were talking going into the break, that would be criminalized. They're trying to criminalize even making that statement that so and such, such and such a Jewish guy or a gal is more loyal to Israel than they are to their home country.
That's right. And they were boasting the other day. I noticed that I think it's two EU states, Croatia and Slovakia or Slovenia. Can't quite remember. They're the latest EU states to have adopted the international working definition of anti-Semitism. Now in Britain, obviously, we are still in the EU for the moment, but this definition has absolutely no legal. It's not legally binding in any way. But they are using it, for example, and making all the councils, all the local councils, adopt this definition of anti-Semitism. They've had the government, all the parties, all the major parties. Labour and the Conservatives have adopted this definition of anti-Semitism, and of course the aim is anybody who is critical of Israel, then they can be ousted from their party or their seat on the council or even their union, their trade union or whatever. It's being used in this way, even though it has absolutely no, it's not legally binding. The Crown Prosecution Service has also adopted this, supposedly an independent body.
That kind of like makes you non-partial now. when you adopt something like that, you're no longer a partial. You should be recused from any type of activity involving these issues now.
It's a form of treason. You know, this is safeguarding the interests of a foreign state.
Against our interests, for sure. Are you familiar with an entertainer out of Scotland, Ian Anderson, Jethro Tull?
Jethro Tull, yes.
Okay, he wrote a song in the 1980s. I'm a big fan of his. I go way back to the 70s. And he, it's called Made in England. I'll just read the last of it. It's talking about the British worker, the British guy. This is 1984, mind you. He says he accepts no unemployment and is too indeterminate station bred, is possessed of skills and reason, flies the flag upon his head, watches the democratic process grind its way through the commons cold, filled with fiery infiltrators who would pave the streets with England's gold. Boy, was he talking about something that was quite clear back then, but few people even saw?
I think there's lots of hidden references everywhere. Well, hidden or not so hidden, everywhere in music and art. Yes. Oh, thanks for that, Dennis. Very interesting. I'll look that one up.
He was so prescient. If you really, really study his work. But I always loved this song because really the England he's talking about and singing about there in 1984 – it's dead today. I just see the British, you know, the guy working in the factories and being skilled with reason, et cetera. I don't see these people even existing anymore. I'm sure they're there, but they are not the majority. They're not really the British people anymore.
There are still pockets of white England left, but they are diminishing in front of our eyes.
A case just yesterday. There was a big show, Channel 4, with a guest that's going to be on right after you, Jack Sen. And he was one of these guys that was kicked out of UKIP for his quote-unquote anti-Semitism. Yes. And he, to his credit, or maybe not, but he got there. He got the publicity. He was there having this Jewish gal, Ms. Levine, Allison Levine or something like that. Not Allison. I forget. It starts with an A. Alice Levine. She lived with him for a week. And how difficult would that be, actually, to let something like that into your house for a week? To his credit, he managed to get through it. Did you have a chance to see that show?
Yes, I did. I watched it thanks to you, Dennis, last night. I saw you'd advertised it.
Was it popular, though? I see on Twitter and such that it seemed to get a fair amount of airplay.
It certainly did, yes. The hashtag was coming thick and fast. And my impression was that they appeared, Jack and Alice, they appeared to, you know, get on quite well and, you know, at least that there is this a debate, you know, there was this chance for a debate between a left-wing, I didn't realize that she was Jewish, but a left-wing journalist and a British patriot. But it was quite odd. I had to laugh at the end when there was a few Skype calls. Jack Sennett, I think there was one with Dr. David Duke and then another gentleman, Mr. Scott, I think. And then finally, Nick Griffin came on and he just called Ms. Levine an idiot. and of course, she was all virtue signaling, oh, you can't have a debate by this. And, you know, yeah, she does, you know, she might have a point, but it's... The reaction from the public on Twitter just says it all, you know. If you're going to invite a left-wing journalist to live with you for a week, and as you say, my goodness me, credit to Jack for you know having the media contacts and setting all this up.
Yes, exactly.
But I'm not sure whether it does the British patriotic cause. many favors. That's my opinion. That's my opinion.
So you think it was more harmful than helpful?
They will edit it. They will edit it for those purposes. But you know, in my very biased view, that they appeared to get along quite cheerfully, and you know, with Jack's wife, and there were lots of smiles and laughter, and the mother, and you know, the mother's obviously an intelligent woman speaking all these languages, and they would edit out anything that wasn't favourable to their agenda. And it was quite obviously ironic because Jack is. His father was half Indian or something. His father was Indian, so Jack's not a white ethnic Briton, and he has an American accent. So it was quite an entertaining watch from that perspective as well. I agree with you, Dennis. I'm not a racial purist. If people are patriotic to Briton, then you know, all we need all hands on deck. This is the state of our current plight. But looking at the hashtags and looking at some of the tweets, well, I hope that Jack is on a nice holiday somewhere. Oh no, he's on your show, isn't he? Well, I'll listen and see what he has to say.
He's coming on next, man. So yes. Jack, it was really great of him, Dax. It was great of him to give us first chance. I mean, it was a huge show. I mean, as far as the viewership in the UK.
There was another show recently. I think it was on the BBC about the far right, about Richard Spencer. I don't know, about Richard Spencer and a black anti-far activist. But I thought that was quite dull. I enjoyed the Channel 4 Jack sleeping with the far right. I mean, you know, it's going to get loads of views, isn't it, with that rather catchy title.
Sure. But to me, also, Allison, is it maybe, just maybe, a recognition that they're having a much more difficult time now ignoring us because we continue to make inroads?
Yes, absolutely. They can't ignore us.
So they understand too. We actually do have audiences now. We're not huge, and they do everything to keep us down. But we do have audiences, and that audience does spend money. It does watch. They can virtue signal all day long. But I heard some of the sound clips, and quite frankly, we can equally edit out the sound clips and make things look pretty darn good.
Yeah, and you know, let's not forget that only just over a couple of years ago, 17.4 million British people, British voters, voted to leave the European Union. And then Donald Trump got elected in the United States. And there is we can see it all across Europe, Italy, France, Turkey, a rise of populist nationalism, which it was inevitable. It was inevitable. The left manages to sustain the system, all the Jewish NGOs, the leftists, the Antifa, they will stick together above and beyond their own individual political aims. But I think you know, there is a sign that we are starting to do the same. We really do have to do that. We do need all hands on deck. I think there is a rise of the right. And a realization, even within the younger generation, that we need to get back to traditional values and all this complete insanity of the transgender lobby, etc. You know, people are, it should all be out in the open. Well, I strongly disagree with that. Children need to be have their innocence protected. Those are perhaps other issues that were for another day.
Yeah, I would have to actually agree with that. You say you've been doing a lot with the Yellow Vest movement. We have not really had a chance to do too much follow-up on that. It's still going strong. I think we're in week 16 or 17 or 18 now, something like that. Can you kind of give us a quick report? What's the movement like? How's it, you know, the size, you know, whatever you have? What can you give us about the Yellow Vest movement?
Well, I think the numbers are pretty constant. It's all over France. The interesting thing this week is that Macron and the state and the leftists, the Antifa, they organized a counter demonstration. And now the Yellow Vest movement is being associated with, guess what? Anti-Semitism. They're all anti-Semitic. So I've not had a chance to go deeper into this week's news as yet. I agree with Alain Sorrel that perhaps there will be a slight drop off, but it will come back because people have had enough, and that's all over Europe and the Western world. People see.
Did you see there was a cemetery in France, Paris, 80? Yes. Oh, such. And of course, I see that. I think, okay, since your media is talking about anti-Semitism, this is probably another hoax.
Well, you know, that's how the French managed to get their anti-revisionist law passed. It was by the desecration of a cemetery. No perpetrators were ever found. Of course, they blamed it on neo-Nazi skinheads, but it wouldn't be their style, and somebody would have known about it, and there would have been evidence, and there would have been followed. But no, that's how they got this anti-revisionist all through. It was by the desecration of a cemetery in a town called Carpentras, and we see these things happening regularly. What was it in America? They managed to have Amazon take down all the revisionist books from Castle Hill Publishers, which don't talk about Judaism or Jews. They just talk about the forensics of Auschwitz, etc. Two cemeteries in the United States had been apparently vandalized, but then it came to light that it had been a storm, and these gravestones had been simply blown over by very strong gusts of wind. And of course, we also saw in 2017 these bomb threats. There were 200 bomb threats against synagogues and Jewish community centers that had been sent by an Israeli Jew from Israel. They can't extradite.
We want him. We want him. I mean, they've used this guy to go after our freedoms in our own country. We want him. From a nationalist point of view, we want him. We want to put this guy away. And what's funny about this, Allison, is if you take that international definition of Holocaust, what is it? You would know it better than I do.
International definition
of anti-Semitism?
Yes. International IRA, International Holocaust Remembrance Association. That's the organization that drafted up this. Yeah. And even the person that drafted it said it's not supposed to be, you know, being implemented in this respect. And it's called
they say that, but he knows exactly what he's doing.
For sure.
But like, we can take that American kid, right, that was working on behalf of Jewish interest in Israel. He's now they won't extradite him to America. Mm-hmm. And it's against the law, everybody. It's not against the law, but it's against the definition to accuse that guy of actually working on behalf of Israel instead of America. That would be considered a definition of anti-Semitism by just observing that a Jew actually is a traitor to your country.
Yes, and these books haven't been replaced on Amazon's list. There are 360 titles in all languages, principally German and English books, were taken down from Amazon. I mean, it was a huge example of modern book burning, and all from pressure of the Jewish lobby, and in particular the Board of Deputies of British Jews. I made this point in court last week. Of course, the media ignore all this. You can't have it both ways. You can't be critical of authoritarian regimes, past or present, that imprison dissidents. We hear, you know, when some Western journalist has been captured and imprisoned in some foreign country, I don't know, Malaysia or whatever, North Korea. The same things are happening here. You can't criticize one authoritarian regime and then implement the same actions and claim to be a liberal Western democracy. And it's with the freedom of speech. You either have freedom of speech or you have a range of permitted opinion. And that is where we are today. People are fed up with that. And that's also why yellow vests are annoyed. There's thousands of arrests. There's been thousands of arrests just for what people are writing on Facebook and Twitter.
And they're actually shooting people. People are losing yes. hands, eyes, yes. deaths. And here we.
It's partisan also because the it's terrible repression against the patriotic yellow vests, those who would be sympathetic to our kind of views. These people that they've manifested on demonstrated on roundabouts and on motorways, and they've had motorway toll booths burned down. Even these people are in prison, and there's quite a number of them that are in prison, whereas the leftist Antifa, who came out in Paris and smashed up a load of shop windows and then filled their pockets with their looted bounty, none of those were in prison. And that's in the 17th arrondissement in Paris, you know, one of the poshest bourgeois areas of Paris. And the leftists, the scum from the dispossessed suburbs, Parisian suburbs, they smashed all these shop fronts, stole a load of goods, and none of them are in prison. And the left is allowed to come and march in, set off smoke bombs. The security forces are, as you rightly say, targeting people, and people are very afraid of that, losing an eye from a rubber bullet. It really is worrying. But you know, hats off to those patriots who still stand there and still go into the agenda and will not still go into the arena and will not bow down to the pressure.
I can't imagine the French, honestly, at this stage bowing down. I think it's gone too far. I don't think it's going to go away. And I hope not, because the French will give actually surprise, surprise hope to the rest of Europe.
I hope so too.
At least Western Europe.
I hope so too. I think, and these laws that they've had, as I was saying, the anti-revisionist laws, together with the similar anti-racist laws that we have in Britain today, thanks to Tony Blair, socialist Tony Blair, equal rights for everybody, but you know, not some are more equal than others. These laws have had the opposite effect of the one desired, that it has caused more unrest. I mean, I think that's probably also the ultimate aim, that they do want chaos and civil unrest and tensions between different groups within the community. That's plainly obvious wherever you go, and from the news, even from the mainstream, who do report on these issues. But I think that there's been, you know, pretty fair blackout. I was heard that the BBC, at the beginning of the Yellow Vest protests in France, the BBC had the government issued an unofficial D notice, not legally binding, reporting restrictions. The BBC not allowed to mention the French protests, not allowed to mention the word France or French on its home news page on the internet. So they are worried about these yellow vest protests. The globalists are worried. That's why they've, you know, tried to, I think in recent weeks, have the leftists and Antifa try and take over and create more havoc, chaos and unrest. And then they have an excuse to just pretty much arrest anybody and everybody, but install military law. And there are, since the attacks, Charlie Hebdo and where else, that there are, when you get off a train in France, there are military personnel, soldiers with machine guns. Apparently the guns are not loaded. They're not allowed to do that.
But
giving this aura of living under some kind of military occupation. Yeah. And
they do that in Jordan too, but you don't feel like it's a military occupation. You just feel that they are there to protect the streets. It's a tough neighborhood, but in France, there would be no need to have them out there apart from targeting their own people.
Well, that's how it seems. That's certainly how it seems.
No, it's not just seeing. That's what's happening, man. It's like, all right.
You're right, Dennis.
Allison, we're actually.